Good afternoon, comrades. Welcome to our fortnightly Sunday discussion, hosted by the Consistent Democrats. Today, the theme is going to be on your party. Ian will talk for roughly about 40 minutes, and as usual, when that time, when Ian finished, I will then open it up for questions and discussion points. Okay, go ahead, Ian.
Okay, thanks. I doubt it'll be 40 minutes, more likely about 30 minutes, but we'll see. Anyway, the title of this talk is "New Is Your Party a New Start for the Workers' Movement?" Question mark. And I would say that we are living through the biggest split in the Labour Party's history, although it's happening in a long, drawn-out, novel manner. And this is a continuation of something that's been going on for many years, a continuation of conflicts in the Labour Party and the Labour movement more broadly since Corbyn's election as leader in 2015. Those tumultuous years of Corbynism, the witch hunts, near victory in the general election in 2017, and then a sabotage election campaign in 2019, and then the forcing out of Jeremy Corbyn as leader. And in turn, I'd say these have continuity of the conflicts over the Cold War in the 80s, the miners' strike of 1984-5, and the defeats of the unions under Thatcher, which and since with support from traitorous neoliberal Labour leaders like Kinnock, Blair, Brown, and now Starmer. I mean, we saw major, conflicts between the Labour left and the emerging neoliberal leaderships in the 80s. But this all came to a big crunch, big head and a big crunch with Corbyn. And the artificially engineered defeat of Corbyn meant that the mass base that his leadership had generated never dissipated. It was never really destroyed. It sort of went into abeyance in a state of resentment at the wrecking operation that the Zionists had made. Some say that about 1 million have now signed up for the project. Through the Your Party website and an earlier one set up by Zara Sultana in July called Team Zara. And branches are beginning to hold their first events, or at least public meetings, although it's been very uneven in the way things have worked. There are public meetings going on around the country in various places, but the creation of working branches has been so far more sluggish. Because there is a problem, of course, about what's to be done about the huge data set from the websites and who's going to collate, distribute, and organise it, given the signing up of many hundreds of thousands of people on a website. By its very nature, that contains a contradiction, I mean, such an enormous data set representing individual socialists or aspiring socialists obviously represents a collective endeavour, as they all signed on to create a mass party opposing this government from the left. But filling in a form on a website is an atomised and individual act, as opposed to joining an already existing local organisation. So, but someone amongst the many who signed up must have the time and energy to create these local organisations. But sorting out who is who is a very sizable task indeed, and we shouldn't underestimate the complexity of it. So, therefore, the new party needs an apparatus of some sort to begin doing that work, and at the same time, the political character of that apparatus is a highly sensitive issue, and there are a bunch of people around Corbyn in particular who are probably the only group likely to get a handle on such a task in the immediate period. And some of these are not popular because the later Corbyn leadership was dysfunctional for the left. and it ran for cover in the face of the Zionist offensive that was aimed at driving out many of Corbyn's most outspoken supporters as a means to an end for destroying Corbyn's leadership. The problem is that the Corbyn leadership was not up to this confrontation at the time. And the political reason, I think, was liberal guilt on the Jewish question. And that's where the throwing in of the towel came from. And I'm just going to go through some of the history, you know. But first of all, the belief that past persecution and the Nazi genocide in the 20th century ennobled Jews as a whole and made it mandatory for the most racist Jewish friends to be treated as legitimate parts of a supposedly progressive working class party is what drove this problem in to a good extent anyway. And Corbyn laid out the terms of his capitulation in a video, an article that he was published in July 2019, which put forward some concepts that are simply indefensible, particularly in the light of today's genocide. And I'll just quote what he said. He said this. He said, "Opposition of the, to the Israeli government must never use anti-Semitic ideas, such as it attributing its injustices to Jewish identity, demanding that Jews in Britain or elsewhere answer for its conduct, or comparing Israel to the Nazis. Many Jews view calls for Israel to cease to exist as calls for expulsion or genocide. Arguing for one state with rights for all Israelis and Palestinians is not anti-Semitic, but calling for the removal of Jews from the region is. Anti-Zionism is not in itself anti-Semitic, and some Jews are not Zionists. Labour is a political home for Zionists and anti-Zionists. Neither Zionism nor anti-Zionism is itself racism." That article, it's actually, funny enough, it's in Labour Heartlands, but it's just one of many copies that were made of his speech. And that's the one where I found a copy of it when I was researching all this. But the idea that Israel is capable of a genocide, of course, necessarily involves comparing Israel to the Nazis, because the Nazis are known above all for their genocide. You know, I mean, it's clear evidence of guilty liberalism, not really socialism, being the driving force of Corbyn's errors in 2019 and earlier. And the denial that Zionism is racism is terrible. You know, the equation of Zionism with anti-Zionism amounts to equating the ideology of the oppressor with the opposition to it of the oppressed. And we should recall that we're talking about political Zionism, whose foundation was always the creation of a Jewish state through the dispossession of the Arab people. And the last operative bit is where he says, and I'm quoting again, he says, "Labour is a political home for Zionists and anti-Zionists." That's totally untenable today. It led straight to the massive witch hunt of anti-Zionists in the Labour Party, which Corbyn capitulated to, and logically he could not oppose it, because the most basic tenets of any analysis of reality with any grip on the real world had to be that Zionism was not just any old form of racism, but a form that had achieved its aims through brutal ethnic cleansing and genocide. And it cannot be tolerated in any genuine working class party, really on pain of extinction. So I think Zara Sultana's criticism of the record of Corbyn's leadership on this is therefore quite appropriate and correct. I'll just go through some of what she said. At a festival in Devon on the 17th of August, she made her views very clear when she said, quote, "I am an anti-Zionist. I always have been. Anyone who visits the occupied West Bank, anyone who sees the genocide happening in Gaza, anyone who understands what settler colonialism is will find themselves also identifying as an anti-Zionist." And when she was asked about the Corbyn period, she replied, this. She said, one of the things that we have to be honest about is that some of the mistakes that were made under the Corbyn period, and adopting the IHRA definition was a mistake. Conflating anti-Semitism with anti-Zionism was a mistake. As she was speaking to Matt Kennard a little bit later, she said, and I'm quoting again, she says, it shouldn't have happened this way. There should have been a robust challenge when the political establishment, the media establishment, attacked the Corbyn project. There should have been a more robust challenge to that. And in another earlier interview, she said, and I'm quoting again, she said, we have to build on the strengths of Corbynism, its energy, its mass appeal, and its bold policy platform. And we also have to recognise its limitations. It capitulated to the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. When it came under attack from the state and the media, Corbynism should have fought back, recognising that these are our class enemies. But instead, it was frightened and far too conciliatory. This was a serious mistake. You cannot give these people an inch. Now, those citations are from a very recent article by Asa Winstanley on the Electronic Intifada, which was titled, Will Corbyn Allow Zionists to Sabotage Him Again? And later, the same article quotes Corbyn's eventual response to Zahra Sultana's criticisms. In an interview he did with the Middle East Eye, he said, I think it wasn't really necessary for her to bring up all that in the interview, but that's what she decided to do. And then it says, he explained that he had been under a great deal of pressure to adopt the IHRA by some of his closest supporters. And then quotes him again and saying that was duly done. Now, he was indeed put under such pressure, particularly by the Unite bureaucracy under Len McCluskey's leadership. And a number of his leading entourage today, including James Schneider and Carrie Murphy, are part of a group of Corbyn supporters from the same Unite bureaucracy who are now known to have briefed against Zahra Sultana and others close to her to the right-wing media. And it also appears true, as the account in the Electronic Intifada makes clear, that Corbyn was not initially supportive of Zahra Sultana's call for a new party and her proposal that the two of them co-lead it. But eventually he was forced to capitulate to her initiative and give it his support. So he set up the Your Party website as a vehicle to garner the mass support, which was becoming irresistible, I think, you know. And that's often how organisations and parties come in the real world, come into existence, because they're through contradictions and the antagonistic collaboration or interaction of different trends. There's nothing surprising about that. All such things happen when all parties are founded, you know. I mean, Zahra Sultana has got her contradictions. She's a very strong anti-Zionist and logically anti-imperialist, but she's so far accepted much of the imperialist position on the NATO proxy war in Ukraine. And she was one of 11 Labour MPs who signed, and then under threat from Starmer, withdrew their names from a 2022 Stop the War statement criticising some aspects of NATO's activities in Ukraine. And she was falsely accused of being pro-Russia and pro-Putin by some Tory jingoes in the aftermath of the beginning of the special military operation a year or so later. And she put out a statement then, which there's no reason to believe that she does not still stand on. And she said this, she said, I deplore Putin's invasion of Ukraine, which has unleashed horrific death and destruction across the country. And that's in a statement that's in a Coventry City of Peace website that I found looking up the history. You know, I mean, her point is completely devoid of the understanding that the horrific death and destruction that has been unleashed across the Donbass and other Russian-speaking parts of Ukraine since the US-backed far-right coup in 2014 is part of it's part of a genocidal campaign in itself against Russian speakers, which NATO has more or less initiated. NATO was the initiator of this. The various Ukrainian nationalists are their puppets and their proxies, you know. So the 2022 special military operation was a defensive move in the face of the attempt by the NATO powers to instigate the ethnic cleansing or even genocide of the Russian-speaking population of the Donbass and Crimea also, which inevitably led to armed conflicts as part of a stratagem to defeat and partition Russia itself. And it's really all a continuation of the imperialists' crusade ever since 1917 to tear down everything that remains of the Russian Revolution. So I think, you know, Tsarist Sultan has moved strongly to the left under the impact of the Zionist genocide, and that's very much to be welcome. But she reflects the lack of understanding of the Ukraine war that's characteristic of social democracy in the West. We hope that she'll rethink these things, and that many others will rethink these things as well. You know, we want to be there to actually argue on this, you know. On the other hand, there are some figures whose roots are also in British Labourism who've moved beyond that anti-Soviet and anti-Russian prejudice. And examples of that being George Galloway and Chris Williamson of the Workers' Party of Britain, which is apparently seeking affiliation to the Zara Sultana and Jeremy Corbyn-led initiative. So here we have another example of the dialectic of working class politics in Britain, and not just here, because one step forward is often accompanied by two steps back, unfortunately, you know, meaning that the Galloway-Williamson party, which is what it effectively is now, at the same time as adopting something close to a correct anti-imperialist position on the Ukraine war, as well as on Zionism, has at the same time dabbled in reactionary chauvinism over immigration, and has at times implied climate scepticism, and has joined in the reactionary offensive of the bourgeoisie under populist banners against transsexuals, and even to a degree against gays, you know. And to their credit, Jeremy Corbyn and Zara Sultana have been outspoken against the ruling class's anti-trans bigotry and have spoken out strongly against the evidently Trump-influenced UK Supreme Court judgment recently that effectively abolished many basic rights of trans people. Indeed, Zara has been particularly outspoken over this issue and recently made a very confrontational speech saying that there is, quote, no place for transphobia and bigotry in the new party. She's been slightly contradictory by the independent MP for Blackburn, who is effectively a Your Party MP. That is the reality, you know, although the party doesn't really exist yet. But he has a proto Your Party MP, is Adnan Hussein, who made clear his disagreement with the right of transsexuals not to be legally treated as being of their birth sex. So there is what could be said to be a healthy debate on some of these vital programmatic questions, you know. And as Marxists and consistent anti-imperialists and those who aim to lead the workers' movement to become a tribune of the oppressed, we welcome that some vital programmatic questions are getting an airing, you know. And we certainly give a degree of critical support to Zara over the question of Zionism against Corbyn and his liberal softness on Zionism. And we refute and combat the criticism that is coming from some blue Labour elements. I'm thinking of Paul Nags and people like him, influenced by George Galloway and Chris Williamson to a degree, that her outspoken hostility to transphobia is in some way liberal. I don't think it's liberal at all. It's very sharp. You know, on this question, she's actually criticising the transphobes from the left. At the same time, some of those same transphobes are ironically, well, not ironically, they are actually correct against her and Corbyn over Ukraine, you know. So these complementary errors are the product of the of the differential complicated complementary problems bequeathed to the working class movement by Stalinism and left-wing social democracy, which have all sorts of complementary and interactions and different flaws that go in different ways, that manifest themselves in different ways, sometimes in conflict with each other. But that's life, you know. That is what we have to deal with. That's the subject matter of politics today, of left-wing politics. And as revolutionary Marxists of a Bolshevik tradition, we seek to inject the correct position into these debates and to transcend both of these flawed, you know, flawed ways of looking at things, these flawed traditions, in favour of a genuinely revolutionary programme, which is what we're in business to promote in the end, although obviously we are active participants in these struggles, or we hope to be. Thank you, comrades. I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Ian. Who wants to go first? Anyone want to make a contribution or ask a question? I've got a short contribution to make.
Mm-hmm.
If I may. I believe Jarvis Sultana's comments with regards to transphobia. She got a lot of criticism from Workers' Party right-wing types. But those comments didn't come in a vacuum. I believe they were made in response to Adnan Hussein.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now becoming apparent that some of those independent MPs, whilst they were good on the issue of Palestine, and many of them appeared to have got elected on that basis, on other issues, I would name Shocker Adam as one. They're not actually that left-wing. Some of them are more sort of left-leaning liberals. Mm. You know, Shocker Adam is a business owner and that sort of thing. And he talks about entrepreneurial things. So he wasn't actually a socialist. He was just an independent that to get stood against Jonathan Edwards. I am a bit concerned that some of those MPs are being given a precedent in this new party simply because they're one of the six independent MPs. And I think we might find that along the way that might be a bit of a mistake. So that's my small caveat on it. Thanks.
Cheers.
Who else wants to come in?
There's so much to talk about. I'm trying to kind of focus on one particular question. It's struggling at the moment.
I'll just say on what Paul said, it's actually quite familiar that a lot of Muslim radical people, or relatively radical people, are very petty bourgeois. The Muslim population and the Asian population generally, there is a petty bourgeois layer of political people who have all sorts of weaknesses. And it was very apparent in respect as well, or it's a similar phenomenon. There are people who are very outspoken and say some very good things who may be small businessmen, you know. And, yeah, I mean, what's his name? Shocker Adam. I think he was once a Liberal Democrat councillor or something, you know. So it isn't really that surprising that, you know, that he would reflect liberal politics, you know. That is, you know, the diffuse nature of the milieu we're dealing with, because actually people have been alienated from the Labour. I mean, for the whole period of the Iraq War, for instance, right, the Liberal Democrat, until Nick Clegg anyway, And even then, and probably to a degree, they still had that aura of being to the left of Labour over the question of the Iraq war and the war on terror and all these things, you know. So people did join the Liberals and were sort of assimilated into some aspects of liberal politics from Muslim communities. And where there is, as there is in a lot of immigrant communities, a certain petty bourgeois, there's a larger petty bourgeois layer, you know. Probably because a lot of people go into business because they can't get jobs. That's another reason, you know, because of the race.
Ian, do you think it's also religious / cultural hangover?
I know.
Or is that unfair? Is it the same as us in the West, our own prejudices? Is it the same as that? Or is that a reflection of their religion, original religion?
One moment, we've actually got a hand up. I want to
Susan speak.
So Ian, can you Paul. And then bring Susan in.
Yeah, bring Susan.
That's it really, carry on.
I think my certain disappointment at the moment is, yeah, we have a single issue in Gaza that it seems to me most people can agree on. But what we aren't seeing is enough people who are looking at the geopolitics. You have a lot of people who are interested in Stop the War or CND, but aren't willing to go full out and say, actually, we need to say no to NATO. Mm. We have a lot of people who are very willing to have lots of arguments about gender, sex, safe spaces, and things that seem to be make or break for them, but they are not sitting there and saying, actually, we support human rights, all human rights, and every baby that comes into this world should feel that no matter what, how they live, what their role is in society, that their rights are protected. And that's where we need to be going. Yeah. So I think a lot of it is going to be about moving the debate on. And one of the things that did come up this morning is how, you know, for a start, most people don't really, you know, they don't ask what sort of Zionist are you, because there are different flavors. But also, if people are social conservatives, what do you mean by social conservatism? You know, we have these tautologies. You take two words that people know the meanings of, or at least there are accepted definitions of, put them together, and suddenly it's a new phrase that can mean all sorts of things to all sorts of people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can't, as your party, argue for system change if we're then going to say, oh, but I'm a social conservative, so I don't want any change. You know, I accept the status quo, or like reform. You know, there's nothing wrong with the part, you know, with our politics. It's just that it's got to be made a bit better to work for a few, a slightly bigger privileged few.
Mm.
So it's about, you know, how do we get the debate above the barricades? Yeah.
How do we get the debate?
Well, yeah, how do we push the debate? Because it's obvious that at the moment there is a lot of, you know, it doesn't matter whether you see it as the press, you know, the BBC, the mainstream media. They drowned out, I think, what were Jeremy Corbyn's very reasonable efforts to try and be the broad church that he espoused. And still got hoist on his own petard, and people go, oh, well, he was too nice. And I'm looking at it and going, well, if you can't be nice, then how are you any different to all the rest of the, you know, you just want a bigger bully. But what I do, you know, there were calls for people at various of the Your Party meetings for a kinder form of politics, for trying to keep ourselves clear, yes, about what sometimes that we're going to define ourselves by what we're not. yeah, I'm with Sarah. We need an anti-Zionist party. I heard very little these last 2 weeks about being anti-imperialist or anti-capitalist or pro, you know, and yes, they're anti-genocide, but nobody's talking about ecocide. Nobody's talking about the environment and or defend our juries or other aspects of geopolitics that should be part of the debate, particularly when you've got, you know, Tommy Rotter's marching through the streets by their 100,000. Mm. Yeah. So focusing, you know, I want to see things move on, and I'm wondering whether the inner circles within the new party, particularly, what is it, Carrie Murphy and the James Schneider and that lot, are quite happily encouraging this to get bogged down in what I would call, you know, the red lines that have been invented, yes, rather than the bigger picture that is what your party should be about. Because when you listen to the people at those meetings, they're talking about housing, they're talking about, you know, jobs, they're talking about the real things, you know, the cost of living crisis, the real things that affect people's everyday life. They're quite clear they don't want genocide, but just as importantly, they don't want to be involved in Israel, you know, in what the MOD is doing to support genocide. And they're not being told about, as you say, what's actually being done in Ukraine, that the British government is supporting a bunch of, you know, a Nazi regime funded and controlled by the CIA. They won't touch it because otherwise they'll get called Putin puppets. Yeah. And Starmer is there, no matter how unpopular, he will not get moved out because he's pro-EU. He wants to drag us back into the EU. And it doesn't matter what I felt like in 2016, but when you look at what Ursula von der Leyen is doing to punish countries which do not go along with her, you know, pro-Ukraine project, and including economically destroying countries like Hungary and Slovakia, and very nearly doing the same to Spain, except they managed to bail themselves out thanks to China. We are looking at, you know, we are looking at bureaucrats who have excruciating levels of power that will kill UK citizens with austerity. Mm-hmm. And we are not pointing out those things. Yeah. You know, thousands died last year. It was a mild winter, but thousands died of hypothermia because our energy levels are so high that people couldn't afford to heat even one room in a home.
Ian, do you want to respond to any of that before I bring Diana in?
Not really. I mean, I think it's all valid stuff in a way. I mean, I think the thing is that we it's just very early days, and I do think we're going to have a lot of these debates. I think it's going to be inescapable. It's, you know, it can't be avoided, and they're already happening on some level. Yeah. Uh-huh.
There is something else I want to mention, but I will bring in Diana first.
Yeah,
go ahead, Diana.
Yeah, I back most of what Susan was saying. The thing, good point about people being concerned about housing, cost of energy, cost of food. In fact, our food system is sodding toxic. Let alone too expensive to eat.
Yeah.
But what needs to be made clear is that the geopolitics and the hardship, the austerity that people are suffering here are connected.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't separate those the government supporting, putting resources into supporting genocide, into supporting manufacture of environment destroying weapons, putting resources into trashing other people's countries and environmentally and genocide, and those resources being stolen from people who need somewhere to live, decent food to eat, need to keep warm, need health care and education.
Mm-hmm. And do you want to respond to any of that?
Well, not really. I mean, I think it's all true. You know, we've got to address all these things. You know, and the party will have to address all these things. And in some ways, it already does. Because if you look at what people like Zara and that are famous for, it's not just the obviously the international questions. It's also rebellions over things like the winter fuel payments, the two-child limits, and all these things. I mean, this is quite a well-rounded opposition to New Labour, in my opinion, you know, that's given birth to this party. But we're going to have to deepen it, obviously. You know, we have to raise a lot more questions for discussion, and including the stuff about ecocide and the environment, which I think, you know, the article in the new issue of Communist Fight, which is Diana's presentation, basically written up, I think is a very good article. I don't know what people think, you know, but I think it's the sort of thing we need to be, you know, pushing, you know. I'm not going to say a whole lot more, because I think this is the right track. There's a whole set of tracks that we have to push debate on, you know, and it all comes down to revolutionary socialist conclusions as to how you get these things, you know.
Before I come in, Mark C, do you want to say anything?
Well, I was wondering, I mean, there's a lot of, seems to be a lot of infiltration into the debates on your party from the Labour right. They're already sticking their oar in.
And
a lot of people are saying that your party will just end up like any other party. And then quoting from some of the people like the Communist Party of Great Britain, which is, they're great, but it's like they're in a bottle waiting for somebody to rub it to come out and actually do something, because they just sit there and they don't do anything. So we need a party that's active like your party, and I'm hoping it goes towards being a revolutionary party, like a communist party. But the great problem we have is everybody's the term socialism and communism have been made to be negative words, and you see it on the TV with politicians and people. Whenever it's mentioned, it's either scoffed at, or they go into raging anger, and that's what they've been doing for a long time, discrediting the left. So we're going to have a big battle on our hands. And I think Ian's right, it's going to take an awful long time to get it up and running, because there's so much to talk about, and we haven't even got a proper structure yet. Mm. So, it sounds great. That's all, really.
Can I just comment? It just regards the time scale. My understanding is that a conference that was originally projected for November is not going to happen in November. It's going to happen after the new year at some point. You know, there's going to be more preparatory work done. And Zara was talking about getting a proper conference arrangements committee with different trends. Not just one exclusive group of people organising it. So I can read into that there's some sort of difference of opinion, or you know, there's obviously the ex-Unite people are most likely pushing for a particular arrangement, which there is resistance to. And what Zara Sultana was saying in her Brixton speech, make it very clear that she's not in favour of that. She's in favour of something much more wide-ranging and reflecting different trends within the movement, which, you know, again, I think she represents the left wing of the movement, the left wing, not the left wing of the movement as a whole, because obviously there are all sorts of Marxists and trends that have a Marxist background within it. But she represents a very strong left wing current of opinion that's pretty sharp at times, actually. And we should be, you know, I find what she says, no, I don't agree with her on Ukraine, obviously, but whether under the logic of events, she might actually change her mind on Ukraine. It's entirely possible. Other people have, you know. Unfortunately, they've retreated on other questions, but it's entirely possible that she could change her mind on Ukraine, you know. I don't see why not, you know. If Chris Williamson can do it, why can't she, you know?
Yes.
But there are things that, you know, there are objective reasons why you would want to change your position, because it's fucking wrong, you know. And it doesn't
work for me.
Oh, the other thing is she's good at swearing in speeches as well.
Yeah, she uses the F word. It's weird.
One at a time, please.
Yeah,
this meeting has been recorded too. It's not easy. People start talking every color. Susan.
Okay. I do think it's really important that not just grassroots, but that we really push for one member, one vote, so that it is the membership voting. And if we want to be really radical, I think it's about the membership of the various parties pushing their priorities and insisting that there are two or three motions that every member of that your party that first conference has, that the membership at that time actually votes on the motions. In other words, that it is not a delegate conference which can be managed by the executive, which are these, you know, shadowy figures behind the party, Carrie Murphy. James Snyder and Roger Hallam, who is doing the assemblies. I don't know if anyone noticed, he's started to organise some of the Your Party things. We don't want to see this system of the chairs managing who gets to speak so that they can manipulate, you know, what's going on. It's obvious that people are happy to talk up and set motions and agree on what's going on. There is no reason why we shouldn't be really speaking out about how important it is that every member of the new party gets to vote on what the policies of the party are and then has time to debate the nuances of what that would entail so that people can really see the consequences of what they want. Yeah?
Yeah.
Because it's all very well to have slogans and to be carried away by things, but we need to be, you know, we need to introduce proper, as Mark was saying, you know, communism and socialism and all the rest have been so demonized. We have to have long enough to debate those things so that people can really say, yes, you know, if socialism is affordable housing for everybody and an end to portfolios and investment and, you know, mortgages to let and all the manipulation of the market, it doesn't work, that we have to have pensions and unemployment money and so that people have enough to live on. We cannot continue with this farce that says, you know, an unemployed person has got to somehow live on, what is it, £76 a week? It's, you know, I mean, that's barely two breakfasts for IDS, isn't it? If you remember him. But, you know, they have consequences. Eric Jarvis was talking about, oh, well, there are enough, you know, there are a million houses unoccupied in this country. I think Diana had mentioned it as well. But the truth is those houses aren't where the jobs are. We need free internet, you know, fibre broadband, so that people can work from home and therefore they can use the housing that's there and then build affordable housing and council housing that people can rent at cheap rates. Yeah?
Yes.
And the investment's got to go at the bottom, and that means a wealth tax. Doesn't mean taxing, you know, people who've got 30,000, 50,000, even 100,000 in their bank account, but it means taxing the people who've got hundreds of millions and billions and trillions and corporations that have the hedge funds that are controlling that money and are spending it in the wrong places for a quick return. Yeah?
Mark and then
Ian. One member, one vote was the simple thing. Sorry. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah.
And then Ian.
Just a small point, continuation of what Susan just said and what I said before. The left are just not educating people on what the left is. I mean, we've got these idiots that were marching yesterday all think that Starmer is a revolutionary left-wing fascist. and it's like, what are you talking about? And you have to try and explain it. And the left just make no effort. And people, journalists make no effort on the TV to pull people up about it. And what? You know, it's kind of like that. Another thing I was going to say about the left is we need to make sure this is not a bureaucratic thing, because what really angers me is the fact that if you want to join a communist party or something, you have to sit an exam and then talk to somebody on the other end of the phone. I don't really want to do that. Part of the reason I've joined parties before is to learn something and to actually say, well, yeah, I'd like to help out in that. I'd like to do this. I don't want to be forced to do anything. But I'm quite prepared to be in the party, support it, sometimes just learn and sometimes be active if I can. That's all right.
Yeah.
Ian.
This question of, I think there are things to do with taxation and all this sort of thing. But we need to actually go a bit further than that. I mean, these things like hedge funds and the billionaire class and all the things that... We want to advocate a program to abolish these things, never mind make them pay a bit more tax, you know. That's really is quite a timid approach the huge amounts of wealth that have been amassed by neoliberalism over the last 50 odd years has created an incredible bonanza of wealth for a very small layer of the population as compared to the impoverishment of the mass. Even if it's relative impoverishment for the moment, it will become absolute. It has become absolute to a degree, and it will be. But we have to have a, you know, I think we have to go a bit, pitch this. We have to have a discussion about how to do this, but we need to counterpose a program of expropriation of these people that actually raised this in the party. And I'm sure it will get support. You know, there are people who are, you know, not simply reformists in the party and whose aspirations are to go further than that. And I think we might be surprised as to who may well be prepared to embrace such things, actually. This is the point I was making about centrism. You know, there may be people who go further than this, and anyway, I mean that's something that I think we should think about, you know. But I think this is an open book, to be honest. It's an open goal and an open book, because I think this thing has not really got started yet. I mean, the likes of these brainwashed characters about marching on the streets on Saturday, you know, and fighting with the police and pissing against walls and God knows what else, you know. that is not the working class. That is a layer that's unfortunately, you know, a product of the decline of the working class in this country and the creation of a large lumpen proletariat, a lumpen layer that's basically criminal, unfortunately. And that is the social base of this new fascism, you know. And we're going to have to address that as well, you know. There's lots of questions that we're going to have to address. Yeah, I'll leave it there. Sorry.
Go on, Mark. Mark?
Is it me, Paul?
I think something we have to be aware of while we're doing all this is that I think anyway, if the Labour Party were to change the leadership, because it's polling extremely low at the moment, it's probably the worst Labour Party ever, to someone like Andy Burnham, we're going to be up against it. Because as much as I don't trust the guy, he's a popular bloke and he's better than most of them. And then you look at the Tory side, you've only got to get rid of that idiot Biden dick and get somebody in like in the vein of Kenneth Clark, and the Tories are going to be back again. And that's my view. So we've got to be extremely careful that we kind of slot into place quick enough to attract people's attention. Because I think reform will be dead by the next general election. They'll have destroyed themselves and Farage will be off gallivanting in the Bahamas somewhere or something. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Mark A?
Yeah, just to query that, Mark. I don't think there is a Kenneth Clark type Tory, sceptical type Tory anymore in the party. Who can actually think for himself. That's all.
Yeah, I'll think of one or something.
There was a point, there was a couple of points I was going to make, but on the question of tax, Susan did make the point in the chat that she wants to go back to the 99% of taxation for billionaires. The kind of tax level that we had under Churchill, I believe it was about the high rate was around 99%, wasn't it, in those days?
Yeah.
But a couple of points I wanted to make more on the question of the internal matters of your party, some of which touches on Susan and what Mark C was saying. The first thing I'm a bit concerned about, I'm in an Oxfam, your party, WhatsApp group, and there's quite a few subgroups that bring off from it. Some of the individuals, despite having a Marxist background, have made noises to the effect that they don't want Marxist groupings actually joining the party. Obviously, as consistent Democrats, it is a Marxist and Trotskyist organisation. We're very open about who we are. Mm-hmm. And I do think there is going to be a whole debate, might seem pretty trivial to the outside, but for those of us actually kind of build this internal party, whether we allow groups to join and organise within it could be a very heated exchange at some point, because there are people in that seem to be joining up that aren't necessarily that radical. And they're sceptical of some of these groups like Militant Tendency and so on. So I do think there's going to be quite some heated exchanges as time goes on as to whether groups will be allowed to organise within. I think they should be allowed to, for obvious reasons, to make sure that this new party actually has a radical agenda. On the question of this whole business of how do we make sure that we don't end up with it being too top down, I've been having some interesting exchanges with some fellow comrades in the group who are also Marxists, actually, who like the idea of sortition. Now, I don't know much about sortition apart from jury service. We're all familiar with it. If you're on the electoral register, there's a chance that you might get called for jury service at some point. Well, so, a couple of comrades, one of them I actually know from my Labour Party days, have been pushing forward the idea of sortition, or sometimes known as people get selected by lot. So when the positions are available, your name goes into a hat, you draw the name out, and they serve for a short period, and then the draw is sort of redone again. But it's usually that you can't stand again. And I think that's potentially something to think about. I actually quite like the idea. I've been reading an essay from the 50s, written by C.L. James. I think he's called Every Man's a Cook, or Every One's a Cook. He wrote about the way things were organised in Athens and how they dealt with things. They didn't do this whole business of elections. People were selected for their roles in their city, you know, and everybody was involved. So I think that's something worth thinking about if we want to avoid the whole idea of so-and-so gets elected because he's been rubbing shoulders with this guy. This guy's really popular, so he's guaranteed to get elected. And I think some people want to get away from that. And I think sortition or selection by lot should possibly be another way we could think about it. Thanks. Mark C.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, because I don't really know what I think about it yet, but I was going to ask comrades, we haven't mentioned the Green Party yet. How do they feel about your party joining up with the Green Party? And how do they feel about Zach Polanski? That's all.
Well, Ian. Just on that, I mean, obviously, I think we're hostile to the idea of bloc with the Green Party, because the Green Party is not a working class party. And you know, Zach Polanski is all very well. I suspect, I mean, I know he was responsible for some witch hunting earlier on in the history of the Green Party of supposed anti-Semites. And apparently he's now renounced that, or said he's renounced that. So I don't know exactly the details. But in the end, the Green Party is similar to other Green Parties in the sense that if you look at, even in this country, the Green Party, which has always been pretty small and marginal. Well, the Green MP, Caroline Lucas, for instance, she got a bit of a mixed record, hadn't she? She on the one hand, she defended George Galloway when he was beaten to a pulp in 2014. She was the only MP in Parliament who bloody well defended him, and it was a terrible attack, and it's outrageous that no one else in Parliament had the courage to actually condemn it openly and publicly. She did. On the other hand, she was involved in witch hunting David Miller, you know, and she signed a letter calling for him to be sacked, you know. So I mean, this is the the Greens have proved to be a bit of an erratic thing, but if you look at what's been going on in other countries like Germany, etc., the Greens have a terrible record. They support NATO. They've been involved in supporting Zionism, actually supporting Israel. This woman, what's her name, Baerbock, who's taken over as the head of the UN General Assembly, of all things. She's a German Green, isn't she? You know, and she's got a terrible record of supporting Zionism. And also the stuff in Ukraine, it's one of the most reactionary figures who could possibly be elected to head up the UN General Assembly in a period when there's a huge amount of discontent at things like the genocide. And somebody like her has somehow managed to get themselves nominated and secure a position as the chief of the. I don't know exactly what her position is. It's sort of like a chair or president, the president of the UN General Assembly. It beggars belief, actually. But that is the Green. You know, the Greens are a petty bourgeois radical tendency at best. They're not organically connected to the working class movement. And I think this, your party is different because it does have, it has these even the negative aspects of it, which is the Unite bureaucracy and what we've been talking about, is a sign actually they have some roots in the working class or in the trade unions. You know, it might have a negative connotation, but it is there. You know, it's a chunk of the old Labour left that's come over in its own bad habits, but it is part of the workers' movement. The Green Party is not. You know. Yes, I think I'll leave it there, but that's what I would say about that anyway.
Who else wanted to come in?
Well,
I suggest then, if no one wants to come in, I guess we'll have to bring this to a close now.
Yeah, I think this probably seems reasonable. We've had a good discussion. It's 5:15. It's not a hugely long discussion, but it's been good. Shall we stop the recording?
Yeah.
I'll stop the recording. We can do any other business. Yeah. Okay.